Welcome to Infinite Consciousness This Week. This is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening. Tonight we have a really interesting guest. His name is Dave Kendall, and he's producer of 10, I guess, mini-series. I'm not really sure what you would call them, Beyond Theology, and I think you're going to find this set of shows quite interesting. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing fine, Eva.
Thanks for coming on at such short notice.
Sure, no problem.
So glad to have you. So, if you don't mind, tell my listeners a little bit about you before we get started.
Well, I work for public broadcasting in Kansas. I've been at the public television station in Topeka, Kansas, for the last 20 years. And for a good part of that time, my main responsibility has been to serve as a producer and host of a local series called Sunflower Journeys, which is just traveling around Kansas and stories about Kansas history and culture, that sort of thing. But I also do documentaries, and in this case, I did a documentary series. It started out to be a one-hour show and turned out to be a 10-part series. So, in a nutshell, that's a little bit about me.
Well, what got you started on this particular one? What made it so vast that it jumped off into 10 instead of 1?
Well, it started out when a local playwright came to us with the idea of doing a documentary or some sort of video about a local author, a congregational minister called Charles Sheldon, who published a little book called In His Steps, and the question, what would Jesus do, which WWJD has become a big part of our culture, you know, came out of that book. It was basically a series of sermon stories that Reverend Sheldon told. And as I say, he was a Topeka minister, published the book in 1896. So something told me it might be an interesting project for me to work on, so I started out working on that as just a single documentary. But we didn't want to just tell it as a historical story, so we wanted to kind of say, in addition to telling the history of it, bring it up to speed, and how do you pose a question like that today in America, where you have people from so many different faiths coming together, so to take a different look at WWJD from that perspective. So we were fortunate enough to get a nice-sized grant from a local family foundation that enabled us to do some traveling outside of the state. And I started looking around and contacting people, and we ended up going to Boston and New York and San Francisco and Erie, Pennsylvania, and kind of places in between to conduct a lot of interviews. And the people we interviewed were very knowledgeable people that have their own specialties, special interests, and ways of looking at things. And it just turned out that I had a lot of good stuff that I could use for the documentary, but afterwards, as I put the script together for the documentary, I realized I just had so much material that I had to do something with it. And with my background producing Sunflower Journeys, I knew that there was some value in putting things together and putting them out there as a series. So I looked at it and I thought, I think I can make a 10-part series out of this. So I just started putting scripts together, and it just kind of it fell together.
It looks to me, I didn't get a lot of time to look over it because, darn it, my internet service went out all day today. You know, of course it goes out when you need it. But it looks to me like it's almost like you're trying to, that these shows are trying to bridge the gap between science and spirituality.
Well, that's one part of it. Basically, as we get into it in the first show is entitled A Finger Pointing at the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea that, well, that's something that Sister Joan Chittister kind of starts us out with, and it's a kind of a common image in a lot of different traditions. And she says the important thing to remember is that any religion is meant to only be a means to sanctity, not an end in itself, she said. So religion is at best a finger pointing at the moon. So that's kind of what kind of launches us off, kind of looking at religion and spirituality and different traditions as our history of trying to make sense of things. But as she said, a lot of times what has happened is that our understanding of the world with scientific discoveries and technological developments has changed even the way we look at God and spirituality. So there's kind of this built-in dynamic that includes bridging the gap there between science and spirituality.
Well, I guess the thing that really interested me when I looked at your site was I've had so many people on my show to talk about there's no mass on the quantum level. You know, we're one. Mm-hmm. We live in a hologram. But I've never had anybody to either from the fundamental, one of the fundamental religions, or either anybody knowledgeable about what the fundamental religions think about what's going on with quantum mechanics and consciousness and the new super science that's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about that? I looked at one of your little shows on there, and one of the ladies and maybe one of the ministers was saying, you know, there's only one God. I mean, I can't remember exactly how they worded it, but they were talking about the quantum mechanics part of it. Did you get into any of that with any of them?
Well, again, I'm not an expert on this subject, and I just kind of put the pieces together and let them tell the story. So I didn't specifically get into that at any depth. It's something that came up, and I think what you're talking to was a remark that Joan Chittister, Benedictine Sisters of Erie, she's associated with that group, brought that up, that you know, as far as our understanding of reality and the universe, you know, there are changes that come along, and she refers to quantum physics, and she says, I'm not an expert in quantum physics, but I know that it has an impact on the way we understand things. And, you know, so she's talking about how quantum physics helped us, you know, see that kind of the duality, the way we used to look at things as matter and spirit. And she says, now I see that matter is basically fundamentally energy and
right.
is fundamentally not different from spirit. So, you know, it was kind of her way of getting at this sense of how science and our understanding of things through things such as quantum physics has altered the way we look at things.
Well, it's certainly changing the face of God within religions. It has to. So tell us about the sequence of your shows and what they cover. And can people watch this anywhere?
Well, it's right now being distributed to PBS stations across the country by American Public Television. And this is something we produce here locally in Topeka, but we made it a free offer so that any station in the country can pick it up and air it.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, about 50 of them have indicated plans to do so, but only 10 that I know of have it in their schedule at the moment. And so it's kind of a growing number, and we're trying to increase that. That's going to change a little bit. In February, the program is going to be distributed basically nationwide on the PBS digital program stream, which, you know, most people get their programming on traditional analog television sets, but we're making this transition in broadcasting to digital, and most broadcasting stations now put out 3 or 4 different program streams. So this will be one of the things that's available on the PBS digital stream that starts in February.
What will we expect to learn on episode 1 of Finger? Give us a synopsis of what we would expect to hear off each one of them, if you don't mind. What will we learn?
Well, the first one's a little bit of an introduction. As I say, the name of it's A Finger Pointing at the Moon. And it's kind of an introduction to some of the people that appear throughout the series. And one of the things that we do in that one is bring in a clip from the program that aired on PBS, or the series that aired in 1988 with Bill Moyers and Joseph Campbell, called The Power of Myth. So that was something that I think was a pretty profound series. And
I didn't get to see it. What was it?
You didn't see that?
Mm-mm.
Well, it was a 6-part series of hour-long programs in which Bill Moyers just sat down with Joseph Campbell and just had extended conversations. And Campbell is, you know, has been a master of interpreting mythology from all different traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had very fascinating, long conversations about mythology and basically how it affects our everyday life. And at the time, it was about the time Star Wars was coming out, and so a lot of what they talked about was related to the imagery of Star Wars. And so it was just very insightful, I thought.
I think Bill Moyers does a good job interviewing people. I've read some of his books. Sorry I missed that one.
Yeah, well, it's still out there, and a lot of people still watch it and refer to it, I think.
What was the name of it again?
It's called The Power of Myth.
Okay, I'm going to make a note so I can do that.
And so one of the programs in that series, I just pulled a little clip from and inserted it in our first program. And the name of their program was The Hero's Adventure. And I noticed that you're interested in consciousness and the evolution of consciousness, or however you phrase that. And Campbell makes the point, he says that what all the myths have to deal with is this transformation of consciousness, that you're thinking in this way, kind of in a limited way.
Oh, yeah, perspective.
And now you have to think in that way, you know, a more broad way.
What happens on Church and State, Episode 2? What will we learn there?
Well, that gets a little bit more into the history of the separation of church and state in America. And, you know, there's a lot of reference made these days that we need to get back to our roots as a Christian nation and as the Founding Fathers intended. So we kind of looked at that, kind of what is the history of separation of church and state in this country. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically what that relates to, and you know, it gets into things as far as American history goes and what the founders intended in the Constitution, in the sense that God is not mentioned in the Constitution. You know, they may refer to the Creator, but it's set up so that no one religion is set up as the state-sanctioned religion, and so there's discussion about the importance of maintaining that so that there isn't a pressure where the state exerts upon citizens to adopt certain beliefs or be affiliated with any particular religion.
So I have to ask this question now because you brought it up. You said Christian nation.
Mm-hmm.
To elaborate a little bit about that.
Well, you know, that's something that is kind of, you hear quite a bit where people say part of the problem with this country and the problems we're experiencing is that we've kind of turned our back on God in some ways, you know, banned God from the classroom, no prayer in the classroom, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And so then they'll say we need to return to our roots as a Christian nation, saying this country was founded on Christian principles and Christian faith. So then, you know, looking at that, that's, as Stephen Prothero states, and Stephen is an interesting author, scholar who is at Boston University in the Department of Religious Studies, and he's done a lot of research into colonial America and American history in terms of religious history, and talking about just the notion and the idea of how things have evolved over time. But it's as he points out, you know, it is a Christian nation, but it's, you know, in terms of percentage and Christians in terms of demographics in this country do make up the largest percent, but it's not only a Christian nation, and especially as time has gone on, we're, you know, we're the most Christian nation on earth, but we're also the most religiously diverse nation on earth, so
yeah.
It's really not something that is one or the other.
I don't mean to make you feel uncomfortable here. The reason I asked that question, I grew up a Baptist, and then when I got older, I converted to a conservative Jew, and then I had this spiritual thing, some kind of thing just happened. I don't know how to describe it. It just happened kind of in my sleep, and it changed me,
mm-hmm.
some kind of epiphany thing. And
right.
Now, quite frankly, I think religion is one of the most frightening organized religion is one of the most frightening things in the world.
Well,
and it scares me to death. It's the main reason of wars all over the place.
Right, right. Well, that's again, one of the things that I love Sister Joan Chittister. She brings this up, you know, she says religion has done a lot of damage. It's the cause of a lot of wars, and that is true. There have been a lot of problems associated with organized religion and one religion pitted against another. And
they simply don't walk their talk.
Pardon?
They don't walk their talk. They do not treat other people like they want to be treated. And that's all that's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a growing movement that I've become aware of through this project about kind of interfaith dialogue and communication, and not only that, but collaboration, so that people can walk together and talk together.
Well, consciousness, you know, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. And that's where somebody else in the series, John Shelby Spong, or he's a retired Episcopal bishop, talked about, you know, he comes from a Christian tradition, and he's for him, that's what he relates to. But he wants to understand people from all different faiths, and so he kind of envisions a situation where you sit in a circle and everybody talks from their tradition, and that you share and gain a sense of unity and try to get beyond the divisiveness or the definitions that kind of hold people apart to get to the essence of what they're all about.
But when I looked at your site tonight, the first thing I saw was that one of them was grew up in a Southern Baptist. I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked on another page, and then I saw Peter Russell on there. Well, I know Peter, and I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be great. It's bringing together Southern Baptist, you know, a fundamental religion with a scientist that actually understands consciousness. You know, the fact that if there's no mass on the quantum level, then there's no separation between anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that everybody has to be the God force themselves, and everybody has to be a piece of that God, so there can't be like a majestic king sitting up on a throne somewhere like we were taught to believe as when we were growing up. It means that we are that thing if there's no thing separating us from anything. Again, referring back to there being no mass on the quantum level, I mean, there's just one large energy force, and if fundamental religions could just understand that science is proving that,
right,
then they can't argue about it anymore. I mean, it's got to help promote peace somehow in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, did you encounter that with any of them? Did those discussions come up?
Well, again, the interviews were all done separately with these individuals, and so the discussions that came were in the editing process, where one person makes a comment that's then juxtaposed with somebody else's content comment, and then you kind of go through that way. So there weren't exactly discussions in that sense. But Peter's an interesting fellow that, is looking at the changes that are taking place in terms of the evolution of consciousness, and that, you know, all kinds of forces are involved in that, including religion.
Mm-hmm.
He has his own unique perspective on it that's interesting, and we get at that in a program called Science and Spirituality.
Yeah, I saw that. That's the one that I'm really interested in. That's kind of my passion, and when I saw that, I was real excited about it. You know, there's a lot of people out there that all agree about what Peter is saying. All the people are on the same page, you know, like Dean Radin and Bill Tiller. They're all on the same page about what Peter has to say. It's the new science. I mean, it can hardly be denied anymore.
Well, Peter has an interesting perspective on thing, you know, his idea, the image of the global brain, you know, which he's been talking about for a number of years, and now with the internet and things with technology developing, it really is more of a reality than might have been imagined a few years ago.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, and Dean's book, Entangled Minds, you know, really talks about that kind of thing, too, with everything being entangled together.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mean to get off the topic. I want to talk about what you're doing. I'm sorry. It's just
well, no, that's fine. It's interesting, and one of the things about these shows is that different people are going to take different things away from them, and so we're kind of interested to see just kind of what where it does lead.
What is your ultimate goal for what you're doing?
Well, I don't know that I have a major goal. The goal might be to kind of help wake people up to the opportunities that are available, as well as the crises that are surrounding us at this point in human history.
Like what?
Well, you know, the things that you've just brought up about religion and kind of the conflicts that go on in the name of God and that sort of thing, that's certainly one one major challenge we're facing, but also global warming and all the environmental crises we're looking at, and overpopulation, getting a handle on that, and dealing with limited resources, and the idea of sustainability, and how can you develop a worldview that helps us live in a more sustainable manner. So for me, I've been interested in kind of the idea of cultural evolution for a long time, and I really liked Joseph Campbell's image that, you know, mythology and the worldviews we have in our head, how we look at the world, really has an impact on how things evolve around us. I just have a sense that, as he put it, we're kind of in this period where we're kind of, the old myths are dying and the new ones have yet to fully emerge. And so it's just a process that we're kind of co-creating our future and our present. This is just something that may contribute to that dialogue.
When you were interviewing these people, what seemed to be their greatest concern in the world right now?
Well, there's quite a diversity of people that we interviewed, and I don't know that they all had the same concern, but, you know,
what I'm curious in, the diversity of interest or concerns, areas of concern.
Well, a lot of them kind of came back to, you know, 9/11 and living in a post-9/11 world and just the urgency of trying to get a handle on some of these things as far as relating to other cultures and being able to not react but to interact more. And so a lot of people have kind of pointed at that and kind of emphasized the importance of getting a better grip on things and being able to communicate with each other better.
Well, I think my son's in the Army. He went in the Army about 3 or 4 months ago, and he came home this weekend for the first time.
Really?
And he told me that they came over the loudspeakers the other day and said, good morning, everybody. We just want to let you know that we're getting ready to go to war with Iran.
They came over the loudspeakers with that?
Yep. So, I mean, everybody better get really serious about what it is they want for the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm happy you're doing what you're doing. It'll at least get people thinking about what's really going on and what they want to do.
Well, that's, you know, so. If I have a major goal with this process, the project, that's it, just doing something from, you know, where I'm at in the Midwest to kind of pull some of these things together and put them out there, because the people that we were able to interview are really thoughtful, insightful people, and you know, I'd like more people to know about what they're saying. So if people aren't familiar with some of these folks that we've interviewed,
well, tell us about it right now.
Well, there's a lot of different people, and some are more well known than others. We have people like Karen Armstrong, who has become more well known in recent years since 9/11, I think, and
I don't know who she is. Who is she?
Well, she's British. She's from London, and she's written several books related to religion. But she's written kind of about one book she's written is called The Battle for God, and kind of talking about, you know, kind of how we've gotten to where we are now in the conflict that involves Christianity and Islam and Judaism, and she's written books that kind of help put things in historical perspective. She's written things that kind of follow up on what Joseph Campbell was talking about in terms of mythology and kind of evolving worldviews. But she has a unique perspective on it because she was a Catholic nun for a number of years and then became somewhat disillusioned and left that lifestyle to continue her own path, so to speak. But she is very, very thoughtful, and she's one of these people that travels all over the world and participates in conferences and does public lectures and writes books and just very, very active.
I noticed you had, I don't know what country it's from, but you had somebody that looked like they were Islamic?
Yeah, that was Sayed Nasser. And he was somebody that we were fortunate to get an interview with when we went to the Congress of World Religions that they had in Montreal in the fall of 2006. He's considered by many to be one of the foremost authorities on Islamic thought, and he teaches at George Washington University. He has an interesting perspective on things. As you might expect, it's a little different than other people have about what's going on in the conflict involving Christianity and Islam, involving the United States against Arab countries and that sort of thing.
What do you have to say?
Pardon?
Can you give us an idea?
Well, he talks about various things, and he comes into play in about two or three different programs, talking about the importance of understanding different perspectives on the world and seeing the world from the perspective of Islamic tradition is somewhat different than other traditions, especially these days. But it turns out that one of his specialties is called the perennial philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of a traditionalist, describes himself as a traditionalist. And we get into this discussion of his understanding of the perennial philosophy, which was interesting. And you talk about synchronicities and the value of synchronicities when things kind of come together. Mm-hmm. Well, this kind of fell together with something I got from the interview with Houston Smith, who was talking about his own development, on his own path and his way of thinking. And when he came across the perennial philosophy by Aldous Huxley, it really turned his world around. So we ended up in one program, the ninth program in the series called Mysticism and the Perennial Philosophy, where Houston is giving his description of Aldous Huxley's approach to the perennial philosophy. And then Sayed Nasser talks about his interpretation of the perennial philosophy, which is somewhat different and came at it from a different perspective than what Aldous Huxley presented. So in his mind, Huxley was the person who popularized the phrase, but he is much more familiar with the people that philosophers that in his mind were more solidly based in traditional approach to that.
Interesting. Well, I'm curious, what, let me see if I can get this question out there so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that he thinks the world needs to understand about Islam's perspective that we don't understand?
I'm not sure I can speak for him on that.
What did he say on your program? Could you just give us a clue? Because I'm curious about that myself. Or
that's,
do you remember?
it's kind of embedded with a whole progression of the conversation that took place in the program that we talked about. That it was related to the Congress of World Religions, and his comments were kind of juxtaposed with some comments that were made by Rabbi David Rosen of Jerusalem. So they, it was kind of a back and forth on the subject of, I'm getting on the script here now to see if I can come up with something that are more precise about
really
what he has to say.
This whole series has got to be really fascinating. I wish my internet hadn't been down all day, so I could have looked into it more.
Well, when it comes back up, all 10 programs are there online, the transcripts for them.
Yeah, I have it now, but I didn't have it in time to prepare for it.
Yeah.
It came up about 10 minutes before we were able to call you.
Uh-huh.
So out of everything that you heard, What do you think were the most profound things?
Out of the whole series?
Mm-hmm.
The most profound things. Well, I don't know. I mean, the thing that Karen Armstrong makes, the comment she makes at the end of the last program, and she's speaking at the Congress of World Religions, and she says, you know, it's not, we don't need another prophet, we don't need another savior, we just need to come together in a sense of compassion and understanding. So that's one thing that it's simple, but you know, sometimes simplicity is the best thing.
When you were interviewing all these people, did you get the impression that all these people got it, that the world is dramatically changing and that it's changing quickly and it's not going to be good unless we do something in a hurry?
Yeah, I think everybody that we interview is pretty well tuned in to the importance of the significance of this phase we're in right now. And so I don't think, and I think a lot of people in general are get the feeling that this is a critical period that we're passing through.
Yeah, I think we're reaching like a critical mass, and it's, when it reaches that peak, something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like kind of like the scales of justice, and when it goes over from 50% or 51% energy one way to 49% another way, when it gets to, you know, 50.999 and tips that scales just enough, then it's, I don't think it'll ever come back.
Right, right.
And I'm talking about, you know, violence and wars and despair and poverty and, you know, money markets crashing and
right.
I just, you know, it's scary. Did you interview Edgar Mitchell on this?
No, I didn't.
About you interviewing Edgar.
No, we didn't. It's one of those things that there's a lot of people we didn't interview that I'd love to interview, and the range of people we interviewed is fairly narrow. But again, it goes back to the origins of the series where mm-hmm. it came out of this documentary on What Would Jesus Do, and so that's kind of influenced who we ended up interviewing.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, as far as what you were saying before that, though, as far as, you know, all the challenges and the kind of the tipping point, it's true, and it is a critical time in history, and things could devolve. It's something that one of the programs, one of the participants in the program, Dr. James Forbes Jr., who was at Riverside Church in New York City for a number of years, he talks about evolution and how things evolve. He said, but we also have to keep in mind that there's also devolution, where we can take things down, and it's not always that things progress in an onward and upward fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of underscores the importance of kind of getting a grip on where we're at now and see what can be done to turn things around and to prevent the kind of tipping that you were talking about.
Did anybody have any plans or ideas other than just suggesting that everybody needs to do something? Did anybody actually have some plans or suggestions?
Well, there's a place towards the end of the program on science and spirituality where Alan Wallace made a comment. And Alan is a Buddhist scholar that was actually a monk for 14 years and ordained or whatever you are by the Dalai Lama. And he served as an interpreter, translator for the Dalai Lama for a number of years, too. But he's now the president of the Santa Barbara Institute for Consciousness Studies. And Alan made the point that, you know, it's something that you can kind of surrender to despair in some ways if you look at the world around and you see all the challenges and give up, just think that there may be no reason to try to fight it. But at the same time, he said, there's the phrase, think globally, act locally. He said, "Now that's kind of trite, and you know everybody's heard that." He says, "But it's really significant to do what you can locally, knowing that there are other people of a similar orientation who have concern and care for the world and for turning things around." And he said, "You don't know them, you don't know who they are, but in principle, you know they're out there, and that everybody's working together to try to turn things around." And he said, "The consciousness focusing on that." Really has the greatest potential for making some positive
changes.
He's
right. And quite frankly, I would expect someone like him to take that position.
Do you know him?
No, but I understand consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that understands consciousness, that's the way they would talk.
Ah.
But the fundamentalists, the ones that, you're damned to hell if you don't take Jesus as your Savior, even though you treat every single person that you meet the way you want to be treated, you're still going to go to hell.
Right.
I wonder what they say, what plan they have for making the world a better place before it's too late.
Well, you know, everybody's coming from someplace, and everybody changes.
Do they seem open to a one world? Or did y'all even get into that at all?
We didn't really go down that path. And, you know, we focused on other things with people who had more of a sense of, a more open-ended, inclusive approach, mm-hmm. I guess you might say.
I guess I just see what you're doing as opening the door for fundamentalism to open their mind, I guess.
Well, you know, it's something that certainly want to encourage people to have an open mind,
mm-hmm.
Even towards fundamentalists, because everybody has kind of some fundamentalist tendencies in them, I think, you know.
Probably, yeah.
No matter where you're coming from, sometimes you get attached to what your views are, and it almost becomes, this is reality, and I'm not going to change the way I look at things. And change is scary. And a lot of people sometimes are trying to hold on to things a little tighter because things are so scary these days. But I think even there are some opportunities for people, as you've talked about in your own life, kind of reaching these dark nights of the soul where you're just kind of looking for something that gives you a better sense, a better grasp of things. And I think a lot of people are changing and opening up in ways that you might not have expected.
Yeah, you know, Noetic Sciences has done some research on spiritual epiphanies.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been more spiritual epiphanies, you know, like in a blink of an eye, somebody changes. Kind of like Eckhart Tolle or the thing that happened to me. You can't make it happen. You can't stop it from happening. It just happens.
Right.
They've had more since the early 90s. Than ever before in time.
Is that right?
You know, why?
Mm.
Why? If it's not God's way of helping turn the world around, what is it?
Well, you know, of course, there's the Chinese character that crisis is also an opportunity. You know, you can look at it one way, this is a crisis, but it's also an opportunity. And sometimes things have to get to a point that really, you know, compels people to examine how they're living and looking at things and just kind of puts it in your face, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, you know, going back again to Joseph Campbell, I was just looking at what he said in the clip I pulled from The Power of Myth, and what he says is that all the myths have to deal with the transformation of consciousness, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Moyer's asking, well, how is the consciousness transformed? Campbell says, by trials, and it's the test or certain illuminating revelations, and trials and revelations are what it's all about, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's like you have to have something to kind of confront, that confronts you, that forces you to kind of open up to certain things or act in what your heroic potential may be.
Yep, and I think that's exactly why there's about, well, in my opinion, you know, what do I know, but... I think that, you know, we're just on the very cusp of a paradigm shift in understanding.
Mm-hmm.
of consciousness or God, whatever you want to call it, but a more expansive view of the world. And I think that it's going to tilt just any day now to see your thing coming out with some information about fundamentalism and consciousness and science. To me, that's opening the door.
Well, there's a lot more.
I'm glad to see it.
I think there's a lot more we're seeing in the media where this is kind of coming to the surface and people are focusing on it. And I just saw today that there's a two-hour special coming up on CBS at the end of the year called In the Name of God. And a couple of brothers of French filmmakers that were in the World Trade Center and thought they were dying that day, but that kind of propelled them into doing some soul searching and traveling, and apparently they spent a couple years traveling around the world. And so this program I just found out about today, as I say, on CBS, is going to be looking at different perspectives on change and the challenges from different religious traditions. So even on primetime mainstream networks, it's coming to the boiling to the top, so to speak.
That's interesting to know. There's another one coming out in the summer, I think, called Metaphysia.
And I haven't heard of that one.
It's metaphysia.net, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy, his name is Sean Fisher. He came up to iSeem last June, 2006, iSeem. And he interviewed a lot of the scientists and interviewed a lot of the mystics that was interested in consciousness and science at the same time. So that's supposed to come out in the spring, too. Are y'all going to do anything else after this one?
Well, we had just enough funding to do these programs, and then it's just a matter of seeing what sort of response we get. And if there's enough interest, I'd be very happy to do more. So we'll just have to see how it goes. It's just now starting to get out there as far as the broadcast goes, and we have it available on DVD now, so people can, the word is getting out various ways, and people are, we're hearing about people starting discussion groups and that sort of thing. So
people,
if it picks up, we'll see.
I'm sorry. People seem to be starving for this kind of information.
Well, that's what I've been told. And so we'll see if that's the case.
Well, why don't you take a minute right now and tell everybody where they can find your information, your website, how to contact you, how to get a DVD.
Well, the website would be the main way to get there and to find out more about the series, and the address for that is just www.beyondtheology, all one word, lowercase, .tv. So it's www.beyondtheology.tv. And there are 30-second promos where you can see our host introducing the subject for each show, so get a sense of how it looks. And there are transcripts from each show, and also on the home page there, the front page, there's on the lower right-hand side, there's an image of a DVD. If you click on that, it takes you to the ordering page.
Okay. Is there a phone number or an email address you want to give to?
You can call in our 800 number if you would want information or to order a DVD, and that is 800-866-5898.
Okay.
Or if anybody cares to email me directly, they could do that. And the address, my address is just Kendall, KENDALL, at washburn.edu.
How do you know Elmer?
Elmer Green?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Anything connected with Elmer is interesting.
Elmer is quite a fascinating character.
He is.
It goes back to the mid-70s, and I was studying in San Francisco at the Institute of Asian Studies, and I was studying under a man by the name of Dr. Haridas Chaudhary, and I was reading his book. He'd written a book called Integral Yoga, and I looked, and the foreword to it was written by Elmer Green, and I thought, Elmer Green from Topeka, isn't that interesting? So when I came back to Kansas, I started looking into it and eventually made contact with Elmer and got to know him pretty well. And so he's definitely has inspired a lot of people and set a lot of things in motion.
He's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He really is amazing. So which one of the shows, back to your project, which one's your favorite one as it's in?
Which one's my favorite? Well, they each, I don't know, there's one, the third one is called The Ground of Being. And you talk about, you know, earlier you mentioned God and how images of God are changing, and that's what we kind of get at in that program. And that's where the main people involved in that discussion are Joan Chittister and John Shelby Spong and Dr. Forbes and Karen Armstrong. And the title, The Ground of Being, comes from a concept that was, I believe it was coined by Paul Tillich, who was a German theologian. And it was, we get at it in more depth in the program as far as what that implies, but looking at not a being in the sky someplace, as a lot of people tend to think of God, but as kind of the ground of being that kind of permeates all reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting program, and I think it will make a lot of people think about it in a different way as far as our conceptions of God or the supreme being or whatever great spirit image you want to think of. So I think that's a pretty interesting and important program.
What is God to you?
Well, you know, I've gone through my own metamorphosis over the years as I've grown up. I started out as a Methodist in the Midwest and member of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, And then I kind of got into college, and I started getting a little bit disillusioned with organized religion and kind of went through a period of just kind of wondering what it was all about. And then I was exposed to Eastern philosophy and kind of pursued that. I don't really call myself anything now, and I certainly don't think of God the way I thought of God when I was younger. And I don't really, you know, tend to think of God as such much at all. It's a force that really transcends our ability to describe it. And so, it's not a concept that I, you know, relate to much directly in that sense. But at the same time, I get a sense that spirituality is the essence of all life, and mm-hmm. we're all basically spiritual beings, and that in that sense, we're all tied up in God. So that's kind of a roundabout definition or description of how I think of God. But
I agree with you, by the way. It's just kind of the force.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's hard to describe it.
Well, it's kind of, you know, it kind of goes back to what was a Chinese saying or whatever. He who speaks does not know. He who knows does not speak. So, you know, if you really try to describe it, you're exhibiting your ignorance.
Mhm. Mhm. Did you ever have any kind of? You brought up this topic of Dark Night of the Soul in a few minutes ago. What made you bring that topic up?
Well,
I don't remember talking to you about that.
I did a little bit of research on your website.
Oh.
and your biography and saw that you made that reference, and so that's how I kind of came to that. But I think it's common that a lot of people encounter difficulties, and not everybody phrases it that way, but it's a fairly common way of talking about things where you're just kind of put in a situation where you have to just really reevaluate your life and what it's all about and kind of reach, you know, some
level.
Have
you ever had to do that, go through a dark night?
Have I ever had to, personally?
Yeah.
There have been some trying times as in anybody's life. Yeah.
Dark night to me is it's when your nose gets put on the pavement.
Right.
And there's no place to turn.
Yeah.
You know, it's there, and you're in an abyss, and you either got to get up and crawl out or die.
Right.
It does something to you if you manage to get up and crawl out. But I don't even think it's you that gets up and crawls out. It's almost like the force does it, if that makes any sense.
Uh-huh. Well, it's certainly it's a different you.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Well, that's kind of, you know, my sense of growth and change and evolution that, you know, is kind of part of the process, that nothing stays the same, and sometimes you're really... You get kind of your nose down to the pavement, as you say, and that's kind of where you get a different perspective on things.
So you sent me an email, and I didn't get it until we were, like, looking at talking on the phone, but about your wife being involved. What did she do on the program?
Well, my wife is a very interesting individual in her own right, and she's contributed a lot of different things to the development of the series. She's been involved from the beginning when we started selecting who we'd interview,
mm-hmm.
and encouraged me to interview people like Peter Russell, who is one of her favorite people, I think, as far as his intellect and his grasp of things.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also studied with Alan Wallace, so that was one of the reasons we ended up with Alan in the program, in the series. And she accompanied us on a lot of the interviews. And we have a very small crew. It was just me doing the questioning, and I had one other person that was setting up the lights and doing the camera work. And in a lot of cases, Laura was there to help make the people we were interviewing comfortable as we were setting up our equipment and getting ready to tape. And very important in that sense of kind of helping establish a rapport with the people we interviewed.
I'm so glad she encouraged you to get those Peter and Mr. Wallace. I think that's really great.
Well, I am too. I am too. So she contributed to that end of it. And then throughout the editing process, as I was editing the programs together, she gave a lot of good feedback and encouragement as that went proceeded. So she's kind of been more exposed to this whole series than anybody else aside from me. So.
You know what they say, behind every successful man is a good woman.
It's true.
So we got about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to let you talk about whatever you want to talk about. You know, if you could say one thing to the world that you thought would or could make a difference, what would it be?
Well, before I get to that, there is one other thing I just think I want to mention, and that is that the host of this series is an interesting fellow in his own right. And his name is Charles Atkins, Jr., and he's a relatively young guy who's had an interesting life. And you see him on camera, and it's like, boy, that guy, you know, he just comes across really solid and strong and comfortable on camera, among other things. But what we don't talk about on in the program is what his background is, and it's interesting. He had a career as a rap music artist in France, where he had a career in France and was very successful, but he kind of got disillusioned with that, and he ended up coming back to the United States and getting a Master of Divinity degree at
wow.
Princeton. And so he got into that, and now he's a chaplain in a state correctional facility in New Jersey. And so he's one of these guys that actually is walking his talk and every day on a daily basis, but
I would like to have him on the show.
He would be great to have. Just what he is all about and the experience he's had working with inmates and helping people from that point of view kind of reintegrate into society,
mm-hmm.
and to cope with incarceration and other things.
I'd love to. Maybe when we get off the phone, you can tell me. I'll call you back. You can tell me how to contact him.
Sure. Sure.
That would be good. Okay, so you got 5 minutes.
So, The other question you were asking, you would you like to repeat that as far as what I'd like to leave this?
Yeah, if you could say anything you wanted to the world that you thought would or could make a difference, or whatever you think that's important about your work or your opinions, what would it be?
Well, as I say, I'm not pretending to have all the answers or that all the answers are in this series, but we just put some things out there that I think are thought-provoking and kind of contribute to the dialogue that's going on all over the place these days, where people are trying to make sense about what's happening in the world. And I think it is a very historic time that we're passing through, and it's uncertain just what might come out of it, because there's a lot of instability, and you know, it's not guaranteed that we're going to not go through some really rough times. But on the other hand, I think there are a lot of hopeful signs out there where when things get rough, people can kind of pull together and work through it. And I think it's, you know, there's reason to be optimistic that that may be happening, and that this whole process, it just, things have to get bad before you face up to some changes that are necessary. And so a lot of the people that we've interviewed have a determination to do what they can to help make this a successful transformation. And I think there are a lot of other people out there that are also contributing. So, you know, I guess, in my perspective, you know, we've been on Earth for millions of years. This is really, you know, kind of a, you got to keep that perspective in mind, where the evolutionary process has been going on for a long time, and this is just the latest challenge. And so I think we'll make it through, but that remains to be seen.
Well, Dave, I commend you on what you did, and I'm so glad you had your wife in there pushing behind you.
Well, me too.
But thank you so much for coming on, and for coming on short notice, and I'll probably call you back and let you, or maybe I'll call you tomorrow and I'll let you go to bed tonight and see if you could tell me how to contact him. I'd like to have somebody like that to come on my show. I've never had anybody like that before.
Well, he'd have a lot to say, I'm sure.
I'd like to do that. Well, thank you so much, and congratulations and agape to you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.